Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us on this Thursday afternoon. And my guest this week speaking to us by phone from his office is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'd love to have your questions and comments during our next half hour. You can call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Go online and send us an email. ask@wbaa.org is the email address, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us as always.
Hey, Stan. It's a pleasure to be with you all today.
Let me start by talking a little bit about what you just heard Sarah Fenton mention in our newscast, which is the fact that we've got all kinds of hullabaloo surrounding the Indiana primary. Looks like for the first time in many, many moons, it's going to matter this year. We've had Donald Trump in the state yesterday. Ted Cruz is in today for a meeting this evening. Of course, you've got John Kasich, who's from a neighboring state and might have some name recognition here. You got a favorite among those three at this point, just a couple of weeks out from the primary?
You know, Stan, it is nice to matter. You know, as a Politico myself, it's great to think that the primary vote this May in Indiana will pay a big heed to eventually goes on not only to be the Republican nominee, but perhaps the Democratic nominee as well. Our votes do matter here in Indiana. I think that's a great thing. And although we're told that, especially with the spotlight that's going to be on Indiana a week from the next, it's great to have that feeling. Don't really have a favorite right now. You know, it's been such a crazy cycle. My wife and I are setting back just like everyone else. And, you know, the main thing I'm looking for is, on a micro level, just like when I'm going in to vote for a congressman, I want someone that's going to reflect the values and the needs of what my community truly desires. So we'll be paying close attention to the media, listening to these candidates over the next couple weeks, and it might even be a game time decision walking into the voting booth.
I don't mean to pigeonhole you here, but you've talked a number of times on this program about your Christian faith, and that sounds very similar to the kind of campaign that Senator Cruz has been running. Do you find yourself aligned with him in that way?
Well, from conservative values, from a faith-based position, absolutely. I mean, I admire his faith, and I admire how he grounds himself in decisions. The only thing that concerns me right now with Senator Cruz is I do believe when you get to that arena on that kind of level, you do have to be open to compromising to a certain degree. You have to listen to your constituents. Obviously, faith is the most important thing in my life, and so that directs my decision making. But it's my job to represent all people in this community, and it will be the president's job to represent the whole of our nation. And we are a nation, a melting pot of many different religions, many different beliefs and degrees of faith in our background. And just with Mr. Cruz's actions, I really want to feel confident that if he does assume that position, that he will stand on principle, but he will compromise when a compromise needs to be made. I'm tired of seeing gridlock in Washington. We've got to work across the aisle, so I want a president who's going to do the same thing.
So do you find that you believe that if Mr. Trump or Senator Cruz are nominated for your party, do you think either one of them can win a national election?
Yeah, I think they have to. I'm very concerned with the direction of our country, Stan, and the direction that we're going.
Do you think they can win?
I do.
You say it's an imperative, but are they able to do so?
I have to believe that they'll be able to do so, and I certainly hope that our party on a national level coalesces around one candidate. The thing that gives me hope is through this election process. You know, I'm talking to people in my own city. They've never voted before, but this presidential election, what's going on right now in our country, has synergized so much passion amongst individuals that have never voted before. I think this is going to be a totally different cultural election that's going to ignite a base and perhaps bring them to the conservative side of the movement that they've never been there before. So I can hope that those voters will get out and support a Republican candidate, and I have to believe that we will have the legitimacy and the power to get through this general election in November and put a conservative representative back into the White House.
Let me ask you the other side of that, which is, do you worry at all about this election being a polarizing force and turning more people off? Because if you wind up with, say, a Bernie Sanders and a Donald Trump, I mean, those two guys, you'd be hard-pressed to find people further apart, more polarized on the political spectrum.
I think our country is incredibly polarized right now. In my young life, I can never remember a country that's been more polarized. So this democratic process, I think, is re-engaging people. And I think, again, going back to my comments about what I want to see in an executive and who I'm going to choose to cast my ballot for in May, not only do I want someone with conservative values, principles, someone that can get our economy back on track and focus on national security, but someone that will end the gridlock, someone that will be a leader and bring people together, work across the aisle, work amongst all parties involved to do what is best for the American people. And I hope the voters hold that person accountable, whoever that individual is, to do that, because I think these candidates are hearing right now that people are sick and tired of what's going on in Washington, D.C., and we want dramatic change. And I think that's why we're seeing the outcry that we're witnessing in our society today.
Let me ask you about your local primary elections. I was looking at the list of people who have filed for local races there in Clinton County, and I noticed there is only one Democrat who has signed up, running for a county commissioner's seat in that field for 9 contested seats. And so that virtually ensures that your party is going to continue to have the majority, the vast majority of power in county government there for the next several years. So I'm going to ask you a question that's going to sound a little odd probably, but even though you belong to the party that is in power and is going to stay in power, do you ever worry that the politics in Clinton County and Frankfort, speaking as you just did about the polarization, are so one-sided that it would turn people off from voting, turn people off from coming to community meetings, things like that, because they know that there's a way that things are already going to be decided?
You know, being a young person and coming into this position, Stan, one thing that I didn't have within me was I didn't have the political establishment within me. So the idea of one party being in power and the other, you know, not being in power really doesn't even translate to me. It's something that I can't even comprehend on the local level because, you know, I look at things through a local lens. And I understand when you get to the state level and the national level that political gridlock and the party system comes into play in a huge way. I know and understand the local level, and I can honestly sit here and tell you today that there is probably just as much infighting within the Republican Party in Clinton County as there is between the Democrats and the Republicans in Washington, D.C. Now, I'd like to think that we get a little more done in Clinton County, and we move initiatives forward, and we create jobs, but I guess what I'm trying to get at is just because someone is labeled a Republican in Clinton County does not mean that this party is going to agree on everything on the local level. And much of that has to do with, you know, we're not addressing social issues. We're not addressing things that are steeply biased in party lines. We're talking about commonsensical, everyday infrastructure problems, community issues that really don't have anything to do with a political affiliation. They have to do with serving those that we call our neighbors. So I've never really felt that the party affiliation in Clinton County determines what type of legislation is going to get passed or what road project is going to move through. That's why in my election, Stan, even though I got past the primary in my last two elections, I didn't feel comfortable. I felt very uncomfortable. When we're on the local level, I can tell you when my constituents go in the ballot box, I really, on the local level, they're not looking at that R or that D. They're looking for individuals that lead with values and principles and will simply get things done for the best of their self and their family.
So as you look at the slate of Republicans who are up for election in a couple of weeks, do you think that the group of people that you have has the ability to reduce some of that infighting within the party that you talked about?
Well, but to a certain extent, you know, and when I say infighting, people might take that in a negative light. I don't necessarily look at that in a negative light. I mean, there's going to be good, vibrant, heated debate in local government. All of these issues are so very close to us. I mean, I've got to walk up and down my sidewalk and see and feel the issues every single day. So to a certain extent, there should be good, dramatic debate that's based in logic with a good premise. I think we have candidates coming up in this primary cycle that want to serve our community for the right reasons. Sometimes in local government, Stan, and you see this, it's hard to get good people involved because, you know, your name gets drugged through so much, and you've got to live here the rest of your life. You know, you can't fly to Washington, D.C., cause a ruckus, and then go back home. You've got to stay here. So I look at the candidates we have coming up, and we have some small business owners. We have some individuals with a not-for-profit background. We have some individuals with an educational background. So I'm seeing just a good crop of people that aren't, you know, the long-time local elected officials in the good old boy network. They're fresh voices with fresh vision that simply want to make this county a better place for their family, for my family, for all of those involved. So from that standpoint, I'm enthused. It's going to be interesting to see, though, how this presidential election and the outcry affects the voter turnout, which might, you know, cause some things to happen here on the local level that no one was even expecting. So I think it's up for grabs, and I can't wait till primary day.
I also see where your assistant there in the mayor's office has filed to be a precinct committee person on the Republican side, and that led me to think about something. If she comes to a point where she's got to vote for a replacement for an office holder, how do you handle that? Do you offer your opinion, or do you kind of stand back and go, no, make your own choice?
No, to be honest with you, you're informing me of that. I had no clue, but, you know, I'm happy that Tina's choosing to become a part of the process. You know, if I didn't support her in that, I'd kind of be a hypocrite because, you know, I'm encouraging people if they want to implement change, be the change they want to see and go out there and get involved. Tina and I have a close working relationship, 8-4, but she's a very smart woman. She's raised four great kids. She has grandchildren. She's going to make the decisions that she feels is best for her, and in no way would I ever violate her own personal beliefs.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting today with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Call us with your questions, the number 496-1999. Send your emailed questions to ask@WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about the Community Police Advisory Board that's been created. Let's start at the beginning. Why do this now? What are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, the Community Police Advisory Board, we look at it as another resource that we believe will enhance the citizen voice component of our community policing work and strengthen that cornerstone of citizen voice within our administration. And I believe that the breadth and depth of the representation of this advisory board that Chief Bacon has put together means that our police force and our community can be sure that we're hearing from a solid cross-section of the community. One thing we've preached on this program with you, Stan, is if someone sees something, feels something that they're uncomfortable with in their neighborhood, we want to know about it. And so I look at this initiative as broadening our ability to listen to those we serve and then come up with policy to effectively serve the city of Frankfort.
There have been, of course, a couple of high-profile cases of police, we'll say, misbehavior or missteps in the past year, not necessarily while on duty. We'll point that out as well. Were you getting pressure from the public for more oversight of that department?
There's always pressure from the public when it comes to public safety, and that there should be. And that's not only driven what's happened here on the local level, but what's going on nationally as well. Our media is covering this in a way that perhaps they've never covered it before. Maybe, you know, going back to the days of the 60s and 70s and the protests that were going on during those decades. So I think, you know, our citizens, they expect even another layer of accountability, transparency, and communication. And sure, you know, we're trying to be proactive, but at the same time, we have viewed what has occurred. We don't accept what has occurred. It's not acceptable in our community. As you mentioned, these were decisions that were made off duty in a private individual's time. But, you know, a Frankfort police officer, whether you have that uniform on or not, you're always representing this community, and those people have been held to the highest level of accountability. But we want this initiative to further bolster our ability to tie in with our community, let them know what we're doing to keep them safe, but also to get that crucial feedback to amend policy and tactics moving forward to make Frankfort a safe place to live, work, and play.
So you're saying that some part of this is due to coverage of what went on in Ferguson, what went on with Freddie Gray in Baltimore, what went on with Laquan McDonald in Chicago, the fact that these are high-profile cases where the police are under scrutiny, some part of that is influencing your decision to do this?
Oh, I'm sure that's a small part, but keep in mind, I mean, when I ran for office in 2011, one of my cornerstones, two of them, were citizen voice and communications, and that was long before those two events happened. I mean, we've preached community policing since day one, but could you say that what's going on nationally and culturally in our society is also affecting our very strong viewpoint that initiatives like this need to be bolstered and grown and leaned on? Sure, that's a part of it. And I think if we weren't looking at the whole of society right now and seeing what people are calling for and then coming up with policy to meet that, we wouldn't be doing our job. But it is important to keep in mind that since day one, those have been two of our cornerstones, and this initiative fits right in like a glove with those cornerstones.
You get to name a city council member to this committee. Do you know who that's going to be?
Not yet. I'm actually going to send out some communication to our city council members and with some information about what the group's going to be responsible for, and then I'm going to ask for their feedback. If I get more than one city council member that yearns to serve in this position, I'll probably meet with them individually and then consult the president pro tem of our council, Jim Moyer, and make a decision from there.
And then does the police chief get to name the rest of the committee members?
We have a graduate of the police department Citizen Police Academy. We have a church pastor. We have one community member from each quadrant of the city, so northeast, northwest, southeast, and southwest. We have a representative from the Frankfurt Ivy Tech Davidson campus, a representative from the Purdue Extension Office of Clinton County, and a Frankfurt police officer chosen by Chief Bacon. And if there's any resident that lives in one of these quadrants of our city, of course, all four, so you'll live in one of them, that wants to apply, you can communicate to the police department, and we will get you an application that you can fill out to be a part of this process.
Right. But then does the chief get to make the ultimate decision if you've got multiple people from each quadrant, say, which of those people gets to serve?
Yeah, Chief Bacon has not given me the detail of that, Stan, but I can only imagine that it won't only be Chief Bacon. It will probably be a representation of either shift captains or he and the deputy chief of police that will vet each one of those applications and of course make a final decision.
While we're on the subject of the police force, they're also trying to cut down on loitering by children younger than 18, also graffiti specifically by kids too. To what do you attribute the rise that Frankfurt has seen in those two activities?
Yeah, so to give some statistics here, there's been a 28% increase in reported juvenile problems and a 72% increase in criminal mischief, and this includes graffiti citywide when compared to this time last year. And these issues, we're also seeing an increase in these issues in the downtown area. This is an absolute shame when someone's property is defaced. And what we think is happening is we think we have some factions of perhaps middle school aged students that in an effort to show that they have what it takes to be a part of a larger gang type organization, they are going around and doing these things. So what we wanted to do through this initiative is to let the community know what we're seeing, to plea to them that if you're seeing unsupervised youth in certain areas of our city, no matter where that might be, please call us, please let us know so that we can get a handle on this. And then another important item that Chief Bacon and I have talked about is getting out to the middle school more. You know, Stan, we talk a lot about getting into our elementary schools, getting into our high schools, because, you know, those are two age groups. You either got kids that are getting ready to graduate and go out in the world and make a difference in terms of having a career and a family, and then you have those elementary school kiddos that were wanting to put a solid foundation for so they can get off and live life on the right foot. But sometimes our junior high school students, our middle school aged youth, sometimes they can slip through the cracks. And so we are going to make a concerted effort to get into the middle school more so that we can intercept some of these lines of thinking so we can hopefully make an impact and cut down on some of the graffiti and other vandalism that we're seeing in the city right now.
Is this the fault of parents leaving kids unsupervised as much as it is the kids' fault?
I think we've got to have a hard discussion about that, Stan. You know, I'm a big believer. Government can only do so much. We can't legislate community pride. We can't, you know, be with our youth every night and every day, all hours of the day. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a cry out to our parents as well, you know, to take action, take responsibility, make sure you know where your kids are at. If they're not home for a period of time, set them down and ask them questions about who they're hanging out with, what kind of decisions they're making. Of course, I mean, it truly takes a good parent that's engaged, and it takes a whole community looking out after those children to really make an impact. It's going to take everyone involved in that child's upbringing, and of course the home structure and the parent structure is an incredibly important component in curbing this as well.
I've lived in a number of cities where there have been privately run clubs or boys and girls clubs for kids, specifically 18 and younger, to hang out with each other, to be supervised, to have some sort of chaperoning. Does your city have enough of that sort of hangout spot where kids can go, be in a safe space, have structured activities? Do you need more of that?
I think a community could always use a little bit more of that, Stan, and I think we can do a better job in Frankfort of providing more, even more family-friendly activities. We're going through a downtown revitalization process right now, and we've been talking about specifically about our youth. We've had them really engaged in the process. I've pulled on my Frankfort Future Leaders Advisory Council, and we've been asking them, what things specifically do you want to see created in our downtown that would be considered a safe space, that would be considered a hip and cool thing to do, and would get you here in a very supervised fashion. So yes, I will say I've talked to some elders in our community, and that has been tried before. Teen clubs, youth clubs have been tried before, and the biggest downfall of those have been that eventually the kids that are making poor decisions will start hanging out there, and then the kids that are making good decisions will say, we don't want to hang out with the bad crowd, we're just going to stay home. So if we do something like this, we've just got to make sure that we have a good administrator or a good leader looking over that space to make sure that if there are some bad apples there, that we're holding people to strict disciplined guidelines so we don't scare away the young people that are coming there to study, that are coming there to peacefully congregate, which is truly the crowd we want to attract, and we want that vibrance and that belief to spill over to all.
With respect to the graffiti, I know your city is worried about things such as gang tagging of property. But another thing that I've seen some cities do in other places is offer up a giant wall space where public art is encouraged, where it is said, look, you can bring your spray paint and you can tag this wall to your heart's content as long as it's not a gang symbol or something that you're drawing. Do you have anything like that in Frankfort where there could be an artistic outlet or a personal expression outlet for these kids?
Sure. I think that's a great idea. I had actually not heard of that idea. We just started up an arts council in our community. It's a part of our downtown initiative, and that's actually an idea I think I'll take to them and ask them if we can do that. Unfortunately, the young people that are doing these things, as you mentioned, their specific gang-related signs and the types, even the collars they are using, correlate to certain gangs. So unfortunately, I don't think this is a sense of artful expression. I think it's purposeful destruction and dominance of an area. But I love your idea. And, you know, we're trying to implement more public art in our community. I know that's something that Lafayette and West Lafayette, Mayor Wisworski and Mayor Dennis, they're doing a great job when it comes to that. And I want to follow in their footsteps. My Frankfort Future Leaders Advisory Council is actually carrying out a project in the downtown. They were given a $5,000 line item by our city council to create a public piece of art, and what they're creating is a hot dog bun bench. So it's something that they thought would be fun. It correlates back to the roots of Frankfort, and it'll provide a photo opportunity for individuals to come down, sit on the hot dog bun bench, and take a picture, and hopefully put that to Instagram, and put that to Facebook, and put that to Twitter. So public art is something we definitely want to broaden in our community, and I think your idea is very worthwhile in terms of researching it.
Well, in fairness, it's not my idea. I stole it from somebody else, but it might be worth looking at. You mentioned the arts leaders in your community trying to organize a little bit better, and that was actually my next point to you was, I wonder if this is a way to actually sort of take two ideas and merge them together and have these kinds of partnership ideas that kill two birds with one stone to try to get extra benefit for a community like yours that doesn't have a ton of extra resources to throw at things. You don't have money coming out your ears to spend on a lot of these things, but it's possible that you could have these conversations to say, if we do this one thing over here, creating this graffiti wall that makes it okay to do this activity where previously it was prohibited or it was seen as illicit in some way, can we in fact solve a couple of problems by doing that? Do you have any sorts of individual people, groups of people who can try to figure out ways to put these ideas together to be creative, to be efficient, and perhaps to do to solve some of these problems in a way that doesn't cost your city a ton of money that you don't have?
Sure. And for the past 4 years, Stan, and all the points you bring up are very valid, and that's something we were faced with right off the bat. Smaller communities, we don't have a lot of resources. We have to become very creative, and we have to grind it out to make any major initiative happen. And, you know, I'll point to Ivy Tech in the downtown. Without having the resources of the Chamber of Commerce, Clinton County Government, the City of Frankfort, the Clinton County Economic Advancement Foundation, Partners in Progress, the Community Foundation, all coming together, that wouldn't have gotten done. And that was a space that was blighted, that was one of the most awful looking corners in our community, and now it's one of the most attractive, and we have this educational component in our community, and we have a public conference center to hold job trainings and board meetings in. So that philosophy that you speak of, we follow it in Frankfort. Now, in terms of public art, the two groups that I would look to is Frankfort Main Street in our downtown. They have a rich history of doing things like this in downtown Frankfort, and also our new Arts Council that's been formed that's worked hand-in-hand with Main Street. I think these two groups synergizing some of these ideas, utilizing an initiative to solve multiple problems, to give young people an outlet to express themselves, while at the same time providing a unique and hip quality of place component to our downtown or perhaps in a city park or a neighborhood, I think is a beautiful idea, and that's the way we've got to continue to think in the city of Frankfort if we want to move forward.
In just our last minute or so, one more topic I wanted to get to. You're thinking of trying to find a way to build a sports park there using a public-private partnership. Really quick, what's that going to cost, and how are you going to find the money for it?
Sure. So we're calling it Project Home Run, Stan. This past 4 years, I have found we have a very active little league and softball organization in our community. I think this can be a revenue generator for Frankfort, and I think we can utilize this project to draw people into our community from all areas of our state to spend money in our local economy and support small business and add a component of quality of place. I am urging our Redevelopment Commission to pass a feasibility study right now, just like we did with Ivy Tech, so we can look at multiple locations, look at all the concerns of those locations, whether it be environmental, the cost scenario, what the renderings and the outlook would look like, how does this feed downtown development. And once we have that feasibility study done with cost estimates and all the before mentioned items, we'll bring that back to our city council, we'll report these things in public, and we will come up with that public-private partnership to drive this project. So I look forward to speaking with you more about this in the months to come, but I think it could be one of those quality of place components to add to the livability of Frankfort and expand our opportunities for growth.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always. We'll do it again next month.
Stan, thanks. Have a great day.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, all of these shows are archived at our website. That's WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership and Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert, civil engineering solutions for better communities. BFSENGR.com. And Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.